tell you the way I feel standing in the middle of my own saloon. My own business here. I got all kinds of plans for this joint. Plans of my own. All my own ideas. Wait till you hear me.
Maybe we can get matching tablecloths and napkins, and we can redecorate the powder room.
You get plenty of powder in there because it stinks.
Yeah. And I'll take down them fighting pictures, and we'll put up George and Martha Washington.
Don't put George and Martha up. I mean, pictures of George and Martha, they always look like they don't want nobody to drink.
No,
Eat it. No, leave all the artwork.
Have they curtains on the door?
No curtains, Edith. We ain't running an ice cream bar.
Oh, and we'll get rid of the pinball machine, because that's gambling.
Edith, you get rid of the pinball machine, and a guy who smells like garlic will come around, kiss me on both cheeks, and put a hole in my head. This is my boss. I'm the boss of this bar, and I'm the boss, and I'm the guy that says what goes.
But you made me a partner.
When did I do that?
When you forged my name.
Before a live audience.
This is Catchy Comedy.
Laughs a plenty tonight.
You just turn on that set and leave the rest.
Tonight, a WISN 12 Commitment 2026 election special. A consequential race on the ballot. Who will voters choose as Wisconsin's next Supreme Court justice? Tonight, an unprecedented event. The candidates together for their first and only debate, each with sharply differing viewpoints. Appellate Court Judge Maria Lazar.
We need a judge and a justice who's independent-minded and yet able to stand up for the law.
A former Waukesha County Circuit Court Judge and former Assistant Attorney General under Governor Scott Walker.
If you're trying to legislate from the bench, that's completely out of bounds.
And Appellate Court Judge Chris Taylor.
My commitment is to make sure that people have a fair process, that their rights are protected.
A former Dane County Circuit Court Judge and former Democratic state lawmaker.
Not just protecting people's rights, but checking the power of the other branches of government.
Tonight, the exclusive head-to-head matchup.
When people describe you as the conservative candidate, what do you say?
Well, it's somewhat amusing.
When people describe you as the liberal candidate, how do you respond to that?
Well, look, I care about people's rights.
And now, live from the WISN TV studios in downtown Milwaukee, tonight's moderators, WISN 12 political director Matt Smith and Upfront co-host 12 News anchor Jaron Jordan.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for your patience and that of the candidates for sticking with us through tonight's severe weather. We are live in our WISN 12 News studio.
We thank our audience across Wisconsin for joining us for the first and only televised debate between the two candidates for Wisconsin Supreme Court. With us right now, two state appellate court judges, the Honorable Maria Lazar and the Honorable Chris Taylor. Thank you both for being here.
You're so very welcome.
Thank you so much.
The top vote getter on Tuesday will serve a 10-year term on the state Supreme Court, filling the seat of conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley, who is not seeking re-election. First tonight, a few ground rules. This is a debate, but we'll be having a conversation. We'll be discussing the key issues facing Wisconsin. Candidates are asked to state their positions, stay on topic, and to be concise. The candidates may speak to each other, but will manage the time on any given topic and move the conversation along if necessary.
At the end, each candidate will make a closing statement. We flipped a coin to determine who will get the first question. So let's get started with Judge Taylor. Here we are just 5 days out from Election Day, and already some 251,000 Wisconsinites have already cast their ballots. Yet a good number say they don't know much about this race and they don't know who they'll vote for. Judge Taylor, with control of the court not at stake, tell us what is at stake in this race.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for hosting this debate. I am so happy to be here, and I really appreciate your flexibility in rescheduling this debate when I was battling with a kidney stone last week. So thanks so much. Well, people should care, and I think they do care about this race. I have traveled all over the state of Wisconsin for the last 11 months, and I have met Wisconsinites from every corner of this state who are hungry for a government that works for them and prioritizes them. And they are hungry for a justice that's going to stand up for them, protect their rights, protect our democracy, and protect our elections. Those things have never been more important. I have dedicated my entire 30-year legal career to protecting people's rights and freedoms, and making sure as a judge that they get equal justice when they are in the courtroom. I have been a lawyer in private practice, the law and policy director for Planned Parenthood, a legislator, and for the last 6 years, a judge. My passion throughout my entire life is justice. I am running to be a justice for the people of Wisconsin.
Judge Lazar, with control of the court not at stake in this race, what is at stake in this race?
Well, again, thank you so very much for inviting us, and thank you to everyone in my home state of Wisconsin for watching. What's at stake in this race? Justice, integrity, independence. I am running to stop the erosion of faith in our state Supreme Court. The choice in this race could not be more clear. On the one hand, you have a judge, an experienced judge, who's been on the bench for more than 12 years protecting the rights of everyone in the state. And on the other hand, you have a radical extreme legislator who is known as the most liberal of the 99 in that assembly, who now, as a judicial activist, wants to put her views, her values, and her agenda in the court above the law. I am running so that we can restore independence, and I am the only credible candidate in this race who can do that. And so that's why I'm looking forward to being Wisconsin's new justice for the next 10 years.
You both describe your judicial philosophies differently. Judge Taylor, you've said your philosophy centers around people and equal justice. Judge Lazar, you've described your judicial philosophy as originalism with a touch of textualism. Judge Lazar, I'm curious, why is Judge Taylor's philosophy not fit for the court?
Well, in this race, you have to understand that we need a judge who loves the law, not a judge who loves their causes or their beliefs or their agendas. I am going to be a justice on this court who's looking to put only the law and interpret the law as it's written. I do not intend to follow any mandate or agenda or to legislate from the bench. I am going to actually look what is there. When people come in front of my court, they know two things. One, I always treat them with respect. And number two, they always have a fair and full opportunity to be heard, and I decide the case only on the law and the facts.
Judge Taylor, why is Judge Lazar's philosophy not fit for the court?
Well, first of all, Judge Lazar is the only person in this race who has brought an extreme right-wing political agenda to the bench. She has refused to follow precedent. She ruled to release personal, private voting information to a right-wing group that tried to overturn our election. Thank goodness she was reversed by the state Supreme Court. She has been reversed repeatedly because she refuses to follow the law. She has a very specific agenda that favors big corporations and right-wing special interests. I don't know of one public judicial endorsement that she has had. In contrast, I have the support of over 160 judges throughout the state of Wisconsin, including the majority of our own colleagues on the Court of Appeals. But let me get to your question. My opponent has described her judicial philosophy as being originalist. What this means is she believes you have to go back centuries to what the Constitution, go back to 1788 when the Constitution was written, or when one of the amendments was passed, like the 14th Amendment was passed in 1868. She wants to go back and basically say if the right wasn't recognized, like the right to abortion, if it wasn't recognized in the Constitution, or if it was not recognized in society, it does not exist.
Judge Lazar, you're shaking your head.
And no, and this is exactly what I've faced through this entire race. race. This race is a race for a judicial seat, not a legislative seat. My opponent is using the same old political playbook, and I will tell you the problem with that is we do not want a legislator. We do not cannot afford a legislator on the bench. As to the statements that I've been reversed, you know, I guess when my opponent has a few more years of judicial experience, she'll understand that being reversed is a part of being an independent judiciary. And the Supreme Court, the four liberal majority on this Supreme Court, was reversed 9-0 by the United States Supreme Court in a case about religious freedom, Catholic Charities. I have a really good friend who's a judge and a mentor to me throughout my 12 years on this bench, and she said, you're actually not a true judge until you've been reversed. So I take dispute of that.
The problem with what my opponent just said is she was reversed in a case called Wisconsin Voter Alliance versus Secord. She was not reversed on the merits. She was admonished by our state Supreme Court because she ignored precedent. She even said in her opinion she was ignoring precedent. That is not what a judge is supposed to do. She is the one who has brought a distinctly political agenda to this court. She has said it on the campaign. She's running to be a conservative justice. She is running with an agenda to restrict access to reproductive health care. It's in her own commercial.
I have to respond to that. I have never said I'm running as a conservative candidate. I've said it's independent, and that's what I am. The Secord case had to do with procedure, and the state Supreme Court sent it back to me, and I changed the way I responded, and that was fine. As to reproductive rights, my opponent is fooling everyone in the state of Wisconsin. The state Supreme Court has ruled on abortion. It is final. It's a 20-week compromise, and I've said as a judge that I will respect and honor that. My opponent, when she was a legislator, when she tried to pass over 243 bills and only 6 passed, one of them was about abortion, and she wanted it to be abortion at any time. Set abortion on the ballot. My opponent, to the contrary, believes it is.
We will get to abortion in a minute. First, we're going to talk about the current state of the court.
Yeah, the winner of this race will fill the seat of retiring Justice Rebecca Bradley. In her decision not to seek re-election, she said, quote, for years I have warned that under the control of judicial activists, the court will make itself more powerful than the legislature, more powerful than the governor. That warning, she said, went unheeded, and Wisconsin has only seen the beginning of what is an alarming shift from thoughtful, principled judicial service toward bitter partisanship, personal attacks, and political gamesmanship. Judge Taylor, is Justice Bradley's assessment correct? And if so, how would you fix that?
Well, look, when I was in the legislature, I saw bills that I thought were unconstitutional be passed. The problem was we had a conservative state Supreme Court that was in the pocket of right-wing extremists. They would not hold the legislative branch accountable. What I will do as a justice is be fiercely independent. I have a strong judicial record. I have never once been reversed. I heard thousands of cases as a circuit court judge. I had dozens and dozens of complicated jury trials. I've written dozens of published decisions on the Court of Appeals. I am scrupulous in applying the law, and I have a spine of steel when it comes to making sure people's rights and freedoms are protected. So I bring a collaborative nature to the court. I've been endorsed by almost every single judge who's ever worked with me. They know how hard I work. They know I like listening to other people's opinions. That makes us a stronger court. So I bring a strong collaborative spirit. I am open to considering other potential, and I think our court is on the right path in protecting people's rights and safeguarding our democracy.
Judge Lazar, is Justice Bradley's assessment of the court correct? And if so, how would you fix it?
Well, I believe, first of all, I do have to respond and say that I have posted endorsements, and they do include the Milwaukee Police Association, Fraternal Order of the Police, and many, many judges as well. But with regard to what Justice Bradley said, I do see that there is a concern by people in the state. And when I go and talk to people across the state, since I've started running in October, they do tell me they're concerned that they will not get a fair and full opportunity to be heard, and that one side or another is going to get a prejudgment in the case. And I will tell you the concern that I have. It's that when someone walks into the court, it's not whether the court is right or left. You need a court that is neutral. You need a court that decides things only based on the law and the facts. And that's what I have done my entire life, and that as a judge, and that's what I will do. We need to have a collaborative court. I agree with my opponent in that. But we also need to have people who will stand up and stand up for the rights, for the laws, and what is right in the state of Wisconsin.
With news this week, let's move to redistricting and talk about that, the geographic lines in the state that determine who represents voters in Congress. On Tuesday, a three-judge panel dismissed a challenge to Wisconsin's congressional maps. The circuit court judges said they had no authority to supersede the Wisconsin Supreme Court. When the court appointed these two separate panels last year, conservative justices Annette Ziegler and Rebecca Bradley dissented, arguing those same concerns. Justice Taylor, given this week's ruling, should this second set, this second three-judge panel, considering a separate lawsuit to the congressional map, should they conclude the same that this panel did this past week?
Well, I'm not going to comment on pending cases. Those cases could come up to the Court of Appeals. They could certainly go up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. What I will say is that I think it's so incredibly important that every citizen who is eligible to vote has the right to pick their elected representatives, not the other way around. When my opponent was representing Governor Scott Walker and defending legislative maps that were drafted in secret that some election experts called the most gerrymandered maps in the nation, I was working in the legislature on a nonpartisan redistricting process. So I have worked throughout my time on making this process fair, taking out the partisanship, while my opponent was defending what some election experts called the most partisan maps in 40 years.
Judge Lazar, on this three-judge panel, should this second panel conclude the same?
I will agree as well that I can't say what they should or shouldn't do. I will note that it was very unusual to send it to those panels. And I will also address redistricting that my opponent has raised. The map in Wisconsin has straight lines, and it follows communities of interest, and it followed the Constitution. And the only thing that a federal court did in that map was move one line from sideways to the other way. If you want to see a real gerrymandered map, then I propose everyone watching go look at the map of Illinois, which a reporter just told me, I think a week ago, looks like a giant octopus swallowing the city of Chicago. That is a gerrymandered map. That is not what we have in Wisconsin. We follow the rules here. And when I was at the Department of Justice, I did my best as a lawyer to advocate for my clients, which were the state of Wisconsin and any individual. I was not hired by, nor did I work for, any governor or any legislator. I work for the Department of Justice in Wisconsin.
Judge Taylor, before this week's ruling, Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan, who is supporting your campaign, had said that the court is dragging its feet and that it may cost us the ability to have fair maps ahead of the midterms. Are the current congressional maps fair?
Look, this is a pending case. We do not, as judges, we cannot comment on pending cases or express an opinion about a case that's pending that could come before us. But I am committed to making sure that every eligible voter in the state of Wisconsin has the ability to pick their elected representatives, not the other way around. That's not how it's supposed to work. So that is my commitment. And, you know, I believe that everyone's vote should count. Votes should not be elevated, and votes should not be diminished based on the drawing of legislative maps.
Judge Lazar, you've written as a judge, I believe the people's representatives are responsible for drawing maps, and the courts are responsible for making sure those maps follow the law. So do the current congressional maps follow the law?
And again, I would agree with my opponent that I can't comment on the exact maps since they are the subject of two lawsuits. But I will say that people have to understand in the state of Wisconsin that I agree every vote, eligible vote, should count. And I think that if you're looking at the maps and the circumstances now, it's highly unlikely that anything will happen before the midterm elections, because people have to start circulating papers this month in April, and you can't be doing that if you don't know who you're going to be representing. When I was campaigning, it was interesting. I met a gentleman who told me that he had not moved in the last 10 years, but that because of the changes in the maps, that he had three different people representing him. And that's also a concern and an issue that should not happen. We should be drawing these maps once every 10 years after the census and moving on and doing that. And they should be drawn by our people's representatives, the legislature, and approved by the governor, and then they come to the courts.
Let's talk about elections. This week, President Trump signed an executive order targeting federal elections. The order, in part, would require proof of citizenship by creating a state citizenship list and limit mail-in voting. Democrats have already filed a lawsuit looking to block that. It comes, though, as Congress debates the SAVE Act, which would also require nationwide voter ID. The president has also said he wants a ban on mail-in voting, all of which could end up before the courts. Judge Lazar, in a press release referring to the SAVE Act, you've promised to uphold Wisconsin's voter ID law and said federal gridlock continues to stall common sense election integrity measures. Do you support every provision in the SAVE Act, including a possible ban on mail-in voting?
No, I don't. What I was talking about and what I stand for is the fact that in Wisconsin, the citizens of this state voted to have a voter ID requirement when you vote, and that's what I would uphold. What I look at, and I actually believe that early voting is responsible and important and necessary and vital, and I think that mail-in voting the same. So I don't stand for all the things that they're throwing in now or talking about now federally. I think it's important that we tell people in the state of Wisconsin that our elections are safe, they're secure, and that their votes count. And that's the key important thing that we need to address in this state.
Judge Taylor, you've previously called Wisconsin's voter ID law one of the most extreme in the country, saying its true intention is suppressing our ability to vote. Last April, more than 60% of Wisconsin voters approved enshrining the state's voter ID law into the state constitution. How did you vote on that?
When I was in the legislature?
On the constitutional amendment last April.
Oh, well, what I do in the ballot box is nobody's business. But I can say that it is the law of the land, and I will implement the law of the land. I'm glad to hear my opponent say that every vote should count, because she has been endorsed in the past by people who led the charge in trying to overturn our 2020 election. And that is very alarming. She will not say whether the Trump v. Biden lawsuit that was filed in 2020 in an attempt to overturn our election, which was defeated by our state Supreme Court by one vote, my opponent will not say whether that was the right decision. I am committed to making sure that all citizens who are eligible to vote can cast a ballot. I am very concerned by what I hear from the federal government. We have the ability as a state, it's our authority to administer our elections. And it seems to me that the federal government is trying to infringe on the independence of the state of Wisconsin. And that is very concerning.
Any response to that 2020?
Yes. I would say that I'm not, people who may have endorsed me in the past, I'm not responsible for all of their thoughts, their ideas. That's absolutely absurd. And that's not a way to look at things. And my endorsements this year, as I've told you, have been very limited. I've put only the people recently, the law enforcement endorsements and my judicial endorsements on my website. That's who I've been endorsed by. Those are the endorsements I've sought this time. With respect to elections, I agree. Every vote should count, and I am 100% for that. And I also believe that we have to uphold the voter ID law that the citizens of this state passed overwhelmingly. And I also would note that when my opponent was in the legislature, she did her best to dismantle those protections for our safe and fair elections, and that is not acceptable.
That's not true. That is absolutely not true. I did everything in my power as a legislator to make sure that people had the ability to vote. It's interesting my opponent will not answer the question about whether she thinks the Trump v. Biden case was correctly decided. That was a lawsuit brought by President Trump to overturn our 2020 election. There was no allegation, by the way, in that suit of voter fraud. It was all on these procedures. That was only defeated by our state Supreme Court by one vote. Our election hung in the balance by one vote. My opponent will not say whether that was correctly decided or whether our election should have been overturned.
And I will say concerned about our election was valid, that that Joe Biden did win, and that's the state of the law in our country, and I support that 100%. I think we should be looking forward. I don't think we should be looking back. I agree 100% of who won that election and how it was won.
Jared's going forward right now.
Yeah, you have both weighed in on election issues as appeals court judges, and the Supreme Court has weighed in as well, from President Trump challenging the results of the 2020 election to Governor Evers attempting to postpone in-person voting during the pandemic. So, Judge Taylor, what election-related issues should the court be prepared to address ahead of the midterm elections?
Well, I'm very concerned that we might have efforts to suppress the vote. I don't know what's going to happen with this SAVE Act. I think that could cause a lot of chaos. I think there could be, I'm hoping that we will continue to allow mail-in voting. That would cause complete havoc. But look, this is why we need a strong state Supreme Court that's going to hold the federal government accountable. My opponent's going to be a rubber stamp for the federal government.
Judge Liz.
I just absolutely have to disagree. I have never been a rubber stamp for any side whatsoever. I'm not beholden to any party. I'm not a member of a party.
Nor am
My
I.
opponent is a Democrat. She
I'm
said as recently as March of this year to a group of people, as reported, that she is still a Democrat. And the problem is, when you look at this election and you look at who's donating money, my opponent has almost $750,000 from the Democratic Party, and she's still to this day will not say whether she will recuse if they bring a case up in front of the state Supreme Court. She has also not said if she will recuse if the organization where she was their policy advisor, Planned Parenthood, brings a case up in front of the state Supreme Court. And I will tell you, when you look at recusal, the easy way for people in the state to understand it, if you're picking a jury and the jury member was a member of a party or was a member of the company that's bringing the lawsuit, they're not on that jury. Why would we want them on that? Why would we want them in that case as a judge?
We'll get to recusal amendment. Any direct
sure,
response?
Absolutely. Well, I am so proud of the tens of thousands of grassroots supporter I have supporting my campaign, unlike my opponent. My average contribution is less than $100. My opponent is being supported by right-wing mega donors. That is who is supporting her campaign. And they know she's going to be their rubber stamp. So I am really proud. I want to run a strong grassroots campaign. My campaign is about the people of the state of Wisconsin. My campaign and my whole commitment to people in running is to be a justice for the people, not the super wealthy, not the billionaires and the millionaires, not the big corporations, but the people of the state of Wisconsin.
I have to respond. Yeah. My opponent has raised over $5+ million from outside groups. 73% of her money comes from Wisconsin. The rest is not. I have not raised that amount of money. I have always been an independent judge, independent justice. I have never stood for any party or any person other than the facts and the law. And my opponent still is not telling you whether she'd recuse from those mega donors who are donating to her campaign.
Let's talk recusal, broader conflicts of interest here. Chief Justice Jill Karofsky will hold public hearings exploring a potential new recusal rule, essentially forcing yes. justices to remove themselves from cases over a potential conflict. Currently, justices are not required to recuse based solely on campaign contributions, endorsements, or independent expenditures from a party. Justice Lazar, do you support a stricter recusal rule, and how far should it go?
Well, I'm glad that there is a recusal petition filed by several retired judges in front of the state Supreme Court. Recusal is such a difficult situation, and it's something where you have to not only recuse if you believe you have a bias, but you have to recuse if you believe that people looking at the case would not think that they're getting a fair opportunity to be heard. My opponent has tons of money coming in and has ties to groups and has not said whether she will recuse for those. She tried to pass a law when she was in the legislature that said that, and now she's disavowing that. that. The key thing that I think is important is recusal really is tied to the integrity of the judge or the justice. And I have spent the last 12 years as a judge showing that I have that integrity and that independence. I have ruled against the state, the district attorney's office, my old employer, the Department of Justice. I have ruled against things that my opponent would believe are right-wing special interest groups, and I don't see the same thing coming from my opponent, who has said to this day that she is an advocate and an activist, which should disqualify her right off the bat from this court.
That is an absolute lie, an absolute lie. I have an incredible, strong judicial record. Never have I said I'm an activist. Never have I said I'm an advocate on the bench. That is totally, totally improper.
Do you support a stricter recusal rule, and how far should that rule go?
I certainly think we should consider it, and I'm the only candidate running who wants to hear from the public on this issue. I believe we should have public hearings and let the public weigh in. It is so critically important that as judges, we have the confidence of the public. And so I am looking forward to hearings, and I do want to hear from the public.
Why should the public believe that you can police yourself?
I mean, we have a judicial commission. I mean, we do, that you can file complaints against judges. We can get complaints filed against us. So it's not like the federal system. It's not like the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yep.
So we do have a system for complaints. It has been a system that I don't think is perfect by any means. I think we need to relook at this system and try to make it stronger so that people have more confidence in what we do.
Judge Lazar, a quick response and to the point of why voters should believe that you could police yourself.
Well, I think looking at my record, the 12 years that I've been on this bench and all the rotations that I've been in, and the fact that I have lived my life as an open book, you can go on my website, judgemarialazar.com. You can see what I've written about my life, my opinions, where I stand on things. I recognize that the state of Wisconsin wants to hear from their judges and justices and their candidates. But I think that you have to look at the integrity of the individual. And I have been, and I will always say, a total Girl Scout in this matter. In fact, I was. And I think that's so important. You do have to trust the judge. I am a lawyer's judge. The lawyers who appear in front of me respect me and appreciate me. I have had no issues whatsoever, and I will continue to do that as a justice for the next 10 years.
Abortion is again an issue in this race. You both have talked about it on the campaign trail and in campaign ads. In a 4-3 decision led by the court's liberal majority last summer, the court's liberal justices invalidated the state's 1849 abortion ban. To both of you, Judge Lazar, we'll start with you. Would you have voted with the court's liberal or conservative justices on that, and why?
I think in that case, I'm not going to comment where I would have voted. I didn't really follow all the briefs and everything that happened. But I will tell you this. I totally 100% respect the decision that was made. I will honor that 20-week compromise. I think that it falls within the parameters of where people in the state believe it should be. And if they don't, the answer is to go to the legislature and the governor, not the courts. My opponent, when she was in the legislature, said that she thought that it shouldn't be 20 weeks or any type of restriction whatsoever, but that abortion should be allowed at any time during the pregnancy up to the end. And she still stands with that. And I think that is out of the mainstream for the people in this state.
Judge Shelley, you can respond, but first, yeah. Would you have voted with the courts, liberal or conservatives?
I would have voted to not implement the 1849 criminal abortion ban. It was superseded by a whole suite of laws that directly conflicted with it. So I think it was the right decision. My opponent in the past has said on television that she would have likely voted with the minority in that case to implement that 1849 abortion ban. I have worked so much of my life as the policy and legal director for Planned Parenthood and in the legislature to protect a woman's ability to access reproductive health care and to make her own personal private health care decisions. I supported Roe versus Wade. The legislation that I worked on in the legislature codified Roe versus Wade, which my opponent does not understand. And that's what it did. That's all it did. Nobody supports what my opponent is saying. Nobody. But I want to say this. there is no one more extreme ever to be a candidate on issues of reproductive health care than my opponent. She called the overturning of Roe versus Wade very wise, and you can look it up on television. She said it right on television. She said she was likely to vote to support.
I'm going to respond. I did not say I was likely to vote. I did not respond ever in that regard. And what I said about Dobbs, which is the decision that overturned Roe versus Wade, is I said it was good that it brought that national ban and put it back into each individual state. So if California, where my opponent's from, or Ohio or Texas or Wisconsin and their citizens want to enact a law that they believe reflects their values, they do so through their legislators. It's not a national ban or a national law or a national line. So in Wisconsin, it is now 20 weeks, and I am not the extreme candidate in this race. My opponent does have that law on the books of hers that did not pass, saying at any time during the pregnancy. It's there, it's black and white.
So it is tragic that we have someone running for the state Supreme Court that is celebrating that there are women all over this country who are victims of rape and incest who no longer are able
that's tragic.
To get
I've never
access.
Said that.
Let
ever,
me
ever,
finish.
Ever.
That is what the reality of overturning Roe versus Wade that you have called very wise. It's not been very wise for victims of rape and incest who now live in states where abortion has been outlawed. It's not very wise for women who've lost their lives in states because they couldn't get help when a pregnancy went wrong. I am a mother of two beloved children. And I and my husband went through a lot of heartache to have our children. There were a lot of tears shed, but I got access to good medical care. I am so grateful for that. But pregnancies go wrong all over this state, and I do not want women to suffer. I want them to get good medical care. My opponent is going to take us backwards. I will take us forward.
That's absolutely ridiculous. This is exactly what we've been doing in this campaign. It's the same old political playbook. If you don't have anything truthful to say about your opponent, then just lie and mislead. I have never wanted women injured, ever, ever, ever. I have always said that the health and life of the mother is the most important thing. I have always said that after that 20-week compromise, there are restrictions or limitations that you talk about with your doctor, not your legislator, with your doctor. And to say that I am extreme, that I want women to die or suffer, my opponent has been saying that from the beginning, and that is absurd.
That's a reality.
Absurd.
That's a reality of the reversal of Roe versus Wade, which my opponent called very wise, and it is tragic.
Justice Zara, I do want to ask you about what you said. You said on the issue, I commit to upholding Wisconsin's current 20-week consensus, not because of personal politics, but because it is the settled law of our state. So if a challenge to this law is brought before the court, have you essentially prejudged the case?
Not at all. Not at all. What I've said there is, if the people of my state of Wisconsin go to through their legislators and decide that they want to change it, if not 20 weeks, make it 18, 22, whatever they want to do, and then the legislature passes a law that the governor signs, and it comes to the court, and I'm on the state Supreme Court, that's a law that, one, would have a presumption of constitutionality, and that's what I would start with. And then I would do, you know, I find it really interesting in these elections that everyone talks about these hot button issues, and no one talks about the fact that I decide every case exactly the same way. I don't care if it's abortion, redistricting, election related, or if it's about termination of parental rights or burdens of proof. I decide them the same way. I look at the law, I look at the facts, and I make a reasoned, determined determination that is based upon those two things. So if there's a law that's passed and it's changed and it comes to the court and it's constitutional, I will uphold it.
Judge Taylor, you previously served as public policy director for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and have long advocated for abortion rights as a Democratic state lawmaker. How could an anti-abortion group expect to receive a fair hearing from you?
Because I have a six-year history of being a fair and impartial judge. I am scrupulous in applying the law. I have issued hundreds of decisions. I've heard thousands of cases on the circuit court. I have never, not one time, been reversed. unlike my opponent, who refuses to apply the law and pursues an agenda that benefits corporations and right-wing special interests. So I have a really strong judicial record. And if I thought that I couldn't be fair and impartial on a case, whatever that case may be, I would recuse myself.
Would you recuse yourself from any case involving Planned Parenthood?
I have not worked for Planned Parenthood in 15 years. I have not worked for various law firms in longer than that. No, I'm sure my opponent would not recuse herself from the corporate law firm that she worked for because it's been so long. So I'm not going to automatically recuse myself on any area of law that I practiced in. I will follow the statutes and the judicial code of ethics, which I always do. And if I feel I cannot be fair and impartial, that is the basis for recusal. And I will continue to do that on the state Supreme Court.
And I'd like to respond to two things. One, I do recuse when my partners and my law firm that I haven't been at for, I would say, maybe 25 plus years would come in front of me. I do recuse. And second, I guess my opponent, when she gets a few more years of judicial experience under her belt, will understand that reversals, as I've said, are an integral and part of the court system, and they show that you are an independent justice or judge. Now, you had another question.
Not
I apologize.
When you are called out by five members of the state Supreme Court for deliberately and patently disregarding precedent, and everyone can read the decision.
And I wish they do, and I hope they will. Yes, thank you.
As Assistant Attorney General, you represented the case and the state, in a case filed by Planned Parenthood. Would you then recuse yourself from any case involving the current law or Planned Parenthood?
So the case that I was involved with had to do with admitting privileges for doctors where the legislature was concerned that doctors performing abortions did not have admitting privileges at hospitals so that women, if they had complications or were injured or hurt, would not have anyone to go with them to that hospital. If that case about admitting privileges came up, of course. That's exactly what you do as an independent justice. You recuse on cases you are involved in or companies that you work for.
Quickly to both of you, and we'll move on. If the legislature passed a stricter abortion ban, say 6 weeks, known as a fetal heartbeat law, Judge Taylor, is there a scenario you would uphold that?
It's so hard to say based on a hypothetical. You have to see the case. You've got to apply the law. We have never had a decision in the state of Wisconsin looking at the Constitution. So I can't say yes or no. I mean, we're not supposed to prejudge cases like that. But what I can say is I value every woman's ability to access reproductive health care and make her own personal private health care decisions. When my opponent was representing Scott Walker and defending that admitting privileges law, thankfully it was struck down by the Seventh Circuit. If it hadn't been, it would have eliminated abortion access for Wisconsin women.
A response, and if the legislature passed a stricter...
And I would say, one, again, it's a hypothetical, but two, I don't believe that the people in the state would accept that limit. That's a little too close. It's a little too early in the pregnancy. But I think the important thing here to remember is when I worked for the Department of Justice, I was an attorney, I was an advocate. I never worked for Scott Walker. I guess you gotta get that straight too. I worked for the Department of Justice. I represented Scott Walker. I represented Tony Evers. I represented Doug LaFollette. I represented the legislature. I represented anyone who was had to be represented by the Department of Justice, including the Department of Children and Families. So I don't understand this issue raised about what I've done there. I was an advocate, and you know what? I wanted to win all of my cases because that's what a good attorney does. As a judge, you step back. As a legislator, you should never be on the bench.
One more quick hypothetical, which I know judges love and you both love.
Go ahead. Bring it on.
Reverse to what we just did, if the legislature removed any and all restrictions to abortion in Wisconsin, Judge Lazar, is there a scenario you would uphold that?
I would again, one, you're talking about a hypothetical, but I would again look to the law, look to see if it was constitutional, and if that's what the people voted for and it was constitutional, But I can't really say exactly where I would go. Again, I'm thinking you're throwing these hypotheticals that just really will never happen. It's never going to be that extreme or this extreme. It's going to be where we are, the 20-week compromise, not at any time.
And Judge Taylor, quick.
I would say the same thing. I do want to say that my opponent seems to have forgotten that she, there was a recording of her talking to some of her supporters where she did say that perhaps a fetal heart, and this is, you can go look this up and read the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
There was a big, and listen to it.
There was a big article about it where she contemplated that perhaps a heartbeat bill was a good compromise. That's exactly what she said. It's on a recording.
What I said on the recording was, I didn't know where people in Wisconsin stood. Some people wanted it from the beginning. Some people wanted it all at the end. Some people may have wanted the heartbeat. I said, that's for them to decide.
Let's move on. Another challenge to Act 10 is making its way through the courts. The 2011 law signed by then-Governor Scott Walker, eliminating collective bargaining for most public employees. A Dane County judge has ruled key provisions of the law unconstitutional. The High Court has denied a request to bypass the Court of Appeals, where it remains. It will, though, still likely end up before the High Court. Judge Lazar, you defended Act 10 as an assistant attorney general.
Actually, I'll correct that, but go ahead.
Go ahead.
I didn't defend Act 10 as an assistant attorney general. All I did was defend the case where the question was the law properly enacted? When it got to the merits, I had nothing to do with any of those cases. It was just, did Doug LaFollette enact the law properly? And the state Supreme Court said he did. That's all I did.
As a justice, would you recuse yourself from this current case?
If the case has to do with whether it was properly enacted, yes. If it has to do with the merits, there's no basis for me to do so whatsoever.
Judge Taylor, you've been outspoken in your opposition to Act 10 as a Democratic state lawmaker. Do you believe that Act 10 is unconstitutional? And would you recuse yourself?
I did not come into the legislature until after Act 10 was passed. I was actually elected after it. And it is a pending case that could appear, it could come before us. I think it's in, I don't know if it's in your court of, in your district. It's not in the Court of Appeals in front of me, but it certainly could come to the state Supreme Court.
Would you recuse yourself from the case?
No. I mean, I've never said anything about the legal merits of it, nothing about the constitutionality of it. I will say that I very much value the rights of working people to be fairly compensated. My grandmother was a single mom to my mother and struggled to make ends meet until she got a union job and she was able to earn a decent wage and she was able to support three kids on her own and help my mom go to college. And that inspired me to go to law school. So I value very much working people being able to get a slice of the pie they help make, and not just the crumbs. It seems the only people doing well these days are millionaires and billionaires.
And that's a legislative answer, not a judicial one, but yes.
It's not, it's an answer about my values.
I was gonna say.
Yes, and values do not belong with a judge on the court. Values are not what's supposed to be there.
You talk about them all the time.
A good judge respects the law. An activist judge respects her causes. Yes,
Act 10
ahead,
before the second district court of appeals. I'm assuming you can't tell us if you've been assigned to that case.
I can't tell you if I have or have not.
I do want to move on. Judge Lazar, you've said that you tell new judges you are in charge of your courtroom when talking with them about taking the bench. In December, a federal jury found former Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan guilty of a felony for obstructing federal immigration officials attempting to make an immigration arrest inside the courthouse. Dugan is currently appealing. The arrest and prosecution, though, sparked nationwide debate and controversy surrounding the power of judges. Judge Taylor, did the jury make the right decision in that case?
You know, I do have great faith in the jury system. I was not in the courtroom, though. I was not the judge who presided over that case. But as a former circuit court judge who presided over dozens and dozens of complicated criminal cases, I do have the faith in juries, typically in my own experience. Now, judge in that case got a fair process, which is what we wanted. She got due process, which everybody's entitled to. That case is now on appeal. I'm not sure how it's going to come out. But I do have great confidence in our judicial system.
Judge Lazar, did the jury make the right decision?
And I'll say I'm not going to comment on whether they did or didn't. And I will also say that I also have presided over a lot of jury trials. And I will say, as opposed to my opponent, who was in the criminal rotation, I was in civil, criminal, juvenile, mental commitments, and I presided over trials in all of them in my 7 years, as opposed to my opponent's 2 years. And I will tell you that in almost every case that I had, when you gave that case to the jury, they did their job, they tried hard, they did a good job, and I respect juries 100%.
And a quick follow-up, do you think the FBI should have arrested Judge Dugan in the first place?
I have no comment on that whatsoever. That case is still pending.
I have been concerned about how the federal government has gone after judges. We just heard it recently. Judges have been threatened with impeachment when the executive doesn't like the decisions that they make. I think there's been a real attack on the independence of judges. I am fiercely independent. I will resist any overreach the federal government that tries to interfere in the independence of our state. So that is a real issue. There have been threats to judges. There's been rhetoric that I don't like. Judges are just trying to do their job. So I think the manner in which Judge Dugan was arrested created a spectacle, and it didn't need to happen that way. And that was concerning.
Do you have any concerns about federal overreach?
And I do have concerns, I would say, with respect to the safety and security of judges. I also do not like when we have politicians on any side making insulting comments to the independence or decisions made by judges. We all try so hard to get everything right. A judge's life is difficult, and it does not help when you have politicians or anyone else insulting judges. Judges are under significant threats, and I've actually spoken on that behalf in front of our state legislature to try to get the judicial security package done, and I think it's so key and important to the independence of that third branch of our government.
Let's move on to Marcy's Law. It will continue to impact our courts. Wisconsin voters approved the constitutional amendment with about 75% of the vote. The goal was to expand and strengthen the rights of crime victims. Judge Taylor, you voted against Marcy's Law twice in the legislature. Why?
I have worked my entire life for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Starting when I was in college, I worked for a domestic violence advocacy group. In law school, I facilitated a support group for survivors of sexual assault. At Planned Parenthood, I worked to make sure sexual assault victims got access to emergency contraception in the hospital emergency rooms to prevent pregnancy. And in the legislature, I worked on several really important pieces of legislation to protect victims of domestic violence. Now, in this particular case, many of the advocacy, the domestic violence advocacy groups that I had worked with had real concerns with the bill. It was not funded, and they were concerned that it would slow down justice for individuals who opted to participate in the judicial system. Now, as it did pass, I respect that. I respect the will of the voters. I implemented it as a circuit court judge. I treated every person who came into the courtroom with dignity and respect. In fact, I still get letters from victims who are very grateful for how they were treated and considered in the courtroom. So I treat everybody.
Given that, do you regret your votes?
No, I don't regret. I don't regret the vote. I think at the time it was the right vote. I was a legislator who did a lot of research. And everyone who I worked with in the legislature will probably tell you that. I didn't just vote because everybody was voting. I really wanted to do the right thing. And when I heard concerns from the very people, the domestic violence advocates I had worked with in so many different capacities, that caused me to hesitate.
Judge Lazar, critics have challenged the wording on the ballot as unclear and insufficient. The court, though, in a 6-1 ruling, disagreed with that. It has led to some questions, including new debates about what information should be made public and when. Are there any negative unintended consequences to Marcy's Law?
Well, I think, first of all, my opponent didn't really explain that she did vote against it, and it was something that should not have been done. It is a very good, strong law. There are some issues that still, when a law is passed, there are a lot of things that work their way through the courts, and there are a lot of issues that don't sometimes have the proper perspective when they're drafted. It's not like we have lawyers in our legislature drafting most of these bills. There are some issues that have come up in my practice with Marcy's Law. I was on committees for victims' rights before it was passed, during that time, and then I implemented it as presiding judge in criminal. So I think there are some points that will have to be addressed, but overall, it has been astonishingly effective and important and a necessary thing that we give to our victims who are suffering through the crime itself and then a judicial system that doesn't respect them and give them the dignity that they're entitled to.
We are coming up close to the top of the hour, so we're going to wrap things up here shortly. I do want to ask about fundraising, though. WISC Politics has tallied the latest spending in the race, nearly $8 million in support of Judge Taylor and nearly $1 million in support of Judge Lazar, far cry from the $115 million in last year's Supreme Court race. Judge Lazar, conservative groups spent tens of millions last year to help Brad Schimmel, but haven't done the same with you. Is it because they don't think you can win or because you've said you're not a Republican?
Well, one, I can win, I will win. And two, the reason why is I'm running not as a conservative. I've never been a member of a party, so I'm not a Republican, and I'm running as an independent. And I think that's the key here. I'm getting support and a big momentum and groundswell from people in this state who are tired of seeing the politicization of our state Supreme Court, and they actually want a candidate who cares about the law and not just causes or political parties.
Judge Taylor, millions, including from liberal donors, have still been spent to back your campaign. Is it because you still say that you are a Democrat, or they've been assured on how you will vote?
I'm not a member of the Democratic Party. I am really proud of the incredible grassroots support that I've received throughout the state of Wisconsin. Tens of thousands of Wisconsinites have become part of this campaign in small contributions. As I said, my average contribution is less than $100. So that's exciting. That's democracy. That's what I love about running. That's what I've really enjoyed about this election. I'm certainly very glad to see that we didn't have Elon Musk come back to our state and try to buy a seat on our state Supreme Court. I was very proud of the people of the state when they stood up and rejected that. But I'm proud. I'm running a really strong grassroots campaign, and there's nothing more important to me.
I do have to add one thing. Yep. My opponent filled out the FCC paperwork indicating that she still is a Democrat to this day. I filled it out saying that I am an independent.
We are nearing the end, your closing statements. We're going to try to get two quick lightning round questions in. First, what U.S. Supreme Court justice, current or former, would you have dinner with, Judge Lazar?
I would have dinner with Scalia and Ginsburg, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because I think they would be fabulous together.
Judge Taylor.
I would agree on Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I would love to have dinner with Alina Kagan. I think she is really interesting.
And if you started and hosted a podcast, what would it be called, Judge Taylor?
Rights for All.
Judge Lazar?
I think I would have to have it be something more interesting, like The Best of Wisconsin.
It is now time for closing statements. We made it. We flipped a coin to determine the order. Each candidate will have 1 minute for their final thoughts. We'll begin with Judge Taylor.
Well, thank you so much to WISN. It's been such a joy to be here. And thank you so much to the viewers. I hope that the viewers saw a huge difference between myself and my opponent. I have worked my entire 30-year legal career to protect the rights and freedoms of Wisconsinites and to make sure that everybody gets equal justice under the law. I have worked to move our state forward. My opponent has spent her legal career taking away our rights and prioritizing corporate interests and right-wing special interests. But this election is not about me, and it's not about her, it's about you. I've traveled around the state of Wisconsin for the last 11 months. You have told me that you want a justice that's going to prioritize you and stand up for your rights rather than the most powerful. That is what I will do as your Supreme Court justice. I will be a justice for the people of Wisconsin. Thank you so much.
And now, Judge Lazar.
Thank you. Thank you, Jaron and Matt, for having me. And thank you to everyone for watching this debate tonight, even though it was a little late. And I will tell you that this debate has made it very clear that the choice And what happens in this election could not be more important for our state and the future of our courts. In this race, you have on one side, we cannot risk putting 10 years on allowing a judicial activist to be on this court who will not use and follow the law, but will act and follow her causes, her agenda, and put those above everything else. That is what a legislator does. I have spent my entire judicial and legal career, 12 years on the bench, protecting the rights of people of the state. When the powerless challenge the powerful in my court, I listen to them and I decide the case solely based on the law and the facts. That is what a judge does. I will be your independent justice. I will, for the next 10 years, stand up for the Constitution, Wisconsin, and the rights. So I'm asking you to vote for me, Judge Maria Lazar, on April 7th. Thank you so very much.
Well, after two delays, we are 5 days from Election Day.
Excellent.
Our sincere thanks to both of you, the candidates, for your time and for being here tonight and shuffling your schedules along with the campaigns to make this rescheduled debate work. And thank you to everyone at home for watching this evening.
If you missed any part of this debate, it will be available on the 12 News app, YouTube, and streaming on Very Local. You can also look for post-debate analysis Sunday on Upfront. A reminder, Election Day is Tuesday. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Feel out of place. Then I met some guys who were going through the same thing I was.
I thought it was just in Madison.
Then I joined from lacrosse.
I thought support was just for someone with cancer. And then I realized it's so much more.
From all across the globe
to right here at home,
there's only one network
and one news team you can trust, 27 News.
Asking the questions you're asking.
And telling the stories that matter to you. Always digging deeper.
Covering the nation.
And covering your community each and every day.
With more depth and detail.
And more live and local coverage.
World News Tonight with David Muir, weeknights at 5:30.
And 27 News at 6 with Amber Noggle and Brandon Taylor. 27 News, we've got you covered.
We've got you covered. At 27 News, it's not just a slogan, it's who we are. It means a commitment to finding the stories that matter to you, keeping you not just informed, but prepared. With the most accurate information everywhere you go, bringing you coverage from your community, your state, and from across the globe.
Good evening, I'm Brandon Taylor.
And I'm Amber Noggle. Tonight, we've got you covered with a developing story out of Madison.
27 News. We've got you.
Creating the art of smart comedy. Starting now.
The Dick Van Dyke Show. Starring Dick Van Dyke. Rosemary. Maury Amsterdam. Larry Matthew. And Mary Tyler Moore.
Thanks a lot, Mark. We'll just wait in here.
Boy, I sure hate Alan's office.
Why?
Well, it's decorated so much better than ours.
Well, even the men's room is decorated better than our office.
Hey, how'd you know that?
The window washer told me. You have any idea what Alan wants to see us about?
Mel didn't say.
Hey, why don't they call these meetings sometime when I'm not having a snack?
There is no such time, my friend.
Rock, what are they doing here?
We're playing bridge. We're just waiting for the dummy.
I thought Alan wanted to see us. But he doesn't want to see you all.
You all? Even with a southern dialect.
Well, who does he want to see?
You, Rob.
Me?
Only you.
Only Rob? You mean to say that I had to rush up here and let my hot chocolate get cold?
Dolly, I'm sorry if I didn't make myself clear.
The only thing that's clear is the top of your head.
Eat your donut now, Berkey. We'll see you later. Oh, hi, Alan.
Oh, hi. Hey, it's nice to see you. What are they doing here?
They're just leaving.
Good.
We just walked Rob up for a little protection.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, a lot of mugging's been going on around the water cooler.
Oh, yeah, very funny, very funny.
Thank you.
Don't put that in the show, though. See you around.
All right, bye.
Yeah. Mel, do I speak a foreign language?
No.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
Can't you understand me? I said I wanted to see Rob. That is Rob. I am Alan. You are Mel. This is a door. Use it.
Well, but I thought you said...
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
Come here. Yeah. Get out of here.
What do you want to see me for, Alan?
Just a minute, Rob. Rob, you're the only one I can turn to. You've got to help me.
What is it, Alan?
Rob, I want you to save my life.
It takes brains, good taste,
nice legs,
and laughter to make it here. Laverne and Shirley, weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern.
Javi finally turned my bad coffee habit healthy. This is my secret weapon.
Most protein drinks are super chalky, but this one is so smooth, creamy, and delicious. I love it.
Most iced coffees have more sugar than a slice of cake and zero benefit.
Swap it and fuel your health instead.
20 grams of protein in 2 scoops, done. 0 grams of sugar, nada. Dessert-inspired flavors,
Just a few simple ingredients with powerful benefits. And yes, you can pronounce all of them.
Try Javi today. Text FANCY to 71319 to order now.
This tastes like your favorite iced coffee, but fuels your day like a protein shake.
And the flavor is amazing.
Without any sugar or artificial sweeteners.
Protein is so easy when it's coffee. I don't like protein drinks, but this one got me.
With this TV exclusive offer, you can save up to 58%, plus 3 free gifts and free shipping with your first order. Don't miss this exclusive TV offer. Text FANCY to 71319 to order now. Do not miss this limited time offer. Try Javi now.
Save your life, Alan. What are you talking about?
Rob, there's a bomb in this office. Right here.
It's a play.
No, it's a bomb.
Baby Fat by Harper Worthington Yates' new play.
Yeah, I'm supposed to do it on Broadway.
Yeah, I read that. Congratulations.
For what?
Well, Yates is a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright.
Well, he wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning bomb there.
Do you?
Rob, you know how I feel about Broadway. I always wanted to make it big on Broadway. And when Harper Worthington Yates asks you to do a play, you just do it. You know, I'm thinking of maybe not even wearing my hair in this part. Yeah, they convinced me that great art doesn't need hair.
Well, I guess so. Picasso's bald.
Yeah.
Guy Kibbe was bald, too.
You see, that's what I mean, Rob. You got a sense of humor. Come on, you got to fix this, Rob.
What? Me? Fix Harper Worthington Yates?
Well, I may have exaggerated a little when I said it wasn't, you know, all funny. He's given me some laughs. There are a couple of hee-hees, a couple of ha-has, some ho-hos, but there are no big...
You want me to put in the yuck?
Yeah, well, there are places that are supposed to have this, but listen to this dialogue here. Yeah, I say to my brother here, you're ruthless, kid. You may get to the top and be rich, but you'll be a Machiavellianaire. Now, what's that supposed to mean?
Well, Machiavelli was an Italian author and statesman. He was supposed to be unscrupulous, so that probably refers to...
Yep, well, I know what it means, and you know what it means. But who's going to tell the audience? What, do we give out pamphlets to explain the jokes?
It is esoteric.
Oh, I don't care about that. It's just too highbrow. Now, Rob, but... So you can fix it. Now, look, I've marked some spots here that need fixing.
Well, wait a minute. How does Mr. Yates feel about my tampering with his script?
Now, look, it's already Friday, and I've got to be at Westport for the weekend for rehearsals. Now, you can get started on this and give me some pages Monday.
Won't he mind if a complete stranger?
Now, you see, right here at the end, the first act curtain needs a big laugh there.
Alan, wait just a second. Yates doesn't know about...
Well, no. Oh, Rob, it's hard to tell a writer that his stuff isn't funny.
You tell me that every week.
Oh, but you're a... television writer. Oh, no offense. You know what I mean? We love each other. Yeah. You know how playwrights are.
But the thing is, he will know the lines are changed.
Sure, but I'll memorize what you write, and I'll throw it in during rehearsal to think I'm ad-libbing. Now, you can't tell anybody, Buddy, Sally, or anybody.
Look, Alan, I'm very flattered that you think I can improve Mr. Yates' script, but if he doesn't know that I'm working on it...
But it's done all the time. Rob, I'm desperate. You gotta do this, mate. Rob, I want this so bad I can feel it inside. You know, Rob, you've got my guts in your hands.
My hands?